Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And this is the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needleworkers.
Yay.
We're going to stitch and chat tonight, so join us for that. And we'll be talking more about the Mystery in Saint-Tropez project, but don't think, oh, no, another whole show about that. Not going to do that. We'll have other things. Plus, Jennifer's back from her trip, so we got to see how the soccer ball, Tamari ball thing is coming. I'm just fascinated by that. It's so cool.
I am, too. It is just absolutely stunning. Both of them.
Yep. She's so good at it, too. Yep. Mm-hmm. So that'll be tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern on the YouTube channel. And Sunday, from Eye Candy Needle Art, Ada Hayden will be our guest. And she designs hand-painted canvas, needlepoint canvas. So,
and charted projects, too. I have two series of Bargello ornaments from her.
Excellent.
I haven't done any of them yet, but...
But you have them.
I have them. And the latest one just came out, I think, earlier this year. They're a lot of fun. She likes really bright colors.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to your conversation with her.
Yeah, that's one of my first questions is, I haven't recorded it yet with her, but that's one of my questions is that she really goes for the bright colors. It's really uplifting. And get out the sunglasses. Yeah. No, she really does. So it's it has a lot of cute ideas. So yeah, it's it'll be fun. Yep. So that's Sunday. Next Wednesday, we will definitely have a Stitch Hour. Whether there's a Wednesday podcast, I'm not sure because Marg and I have a little short trip we are going to make. So we'll have to see if that can be worked out. But there'll definitely be a Stitch Hour. So if you are looking, if you don't see a Wednesday regular podcast show up, it's because travel got in the way. But going to try. Always make the effort. But if we can't get it together, we can't get it together. But we will have a Stitch Hour, so join us for that. And Cindy's working on her mom to join us one time, so that'll be fun if we can get her. How much does she charge per hour? She's pretty expensive, I think. Yeah.
So. Yeah.
We'll work it out. We'll pass the hat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's all that's coming up. Then we are working on the Mystery in Saint-Tropez, gathering our stuff. Now, Kathy is, as we're recording this, she should be able to get the Congress cloth. The one Congress cloth with the off-whites is not going to work. Because of that thread is not available from Rainbow Gallery soon enough or in enough quantity. So that idea that we were kind of waiting on is not going to work. But the other Congress cloth ones are all in play, and then all of the regular 18-point count canvas color combinations, thread combinations she put together are also available. So you can do that. The best way to go about the Saint-Tropez thing is to go to GayAnnRogers.com, and she has a link right there on the homepage. And then you can order your chart, and then there'll be a link to Needle in a Haystack where you can then get your threads and canvas. And do note that you have to buy the canvas. It's separate. She does not have that built into the thread packages because if she did that, then there'd be 50 people who want a different color canvas. So, you know, you buy a thread pack and then buy the canvas that you want. And Kathy's all set up to do that. So that's coming up. And then I was waiting on the Congress cloth with the off-whites to see what that would look like. But now I'm just going to order a Congress cloth package that she's already put together because I want to do it on that linen Congress cloth. So yeah. So get your stuff and we'll be and we're going to do some shows on that separate from the regular weekly stuff, and we'll keep it going. But we'll several people who are trying it for the first time, we'll get some things in here really soon that will help you at least get set up and get going. So
how long will Gayanne keep it available on her website?
I think she's going to keep it for a while. She was all freaked out about it being on the homepage, and but she's moved it off of there. She just made it into a separate page. So I think it's going to stay there for a while so that we aren't under some time constraint.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it needs a little time because people just need to decide. So, but she's put it back up. It's now not taking up real estate on her homepage, so I don't think she minds as much. So, because she's always churning that homepage, and I don't blame her. That's the way you do it.
Right.
So go to GayanneRogers.com, and then that will lead you to Needle in a Haystack for your threads and canvas, and you'll be set to go. And Kathy's ready to deliver that, and Gayanne will get your chart out right away. And there's two or three chart options. You can buy the basic chart option, and then there's one or two ornament options that you can pay. So you don't have to buy the whole stack of paper that I showed the other night. She's got it divided up, but it's quite clear there on her site. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was amazed at how much paper there was. But I got the chart and both ornaments.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's I don't know. It's a lot of pages.
Yeah, it's like 70 or 80 pages, I think, something like that. Yeah, it's a lot. Yep.
But so, it looks like really, really good instructions, as is typical with Gayanne.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, she's definitely among the best. She and Debbie Rowley are always the two I would point to if you say who puts the best instructions together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you can read, you can figure it out. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So get in on those things, and we'll get started on this. But all the material's available. I think Kathy's got everything in-house or coming very soon, because I know when she put those thread packs together, that was the priority, was particularly with Rainbow Gallery, was could they deliver the threads without having to wait 6 months? And so what she used is what they could deliver, so it should not be a problem. And then now I'm most intrigued, because now Jennifer and Beth and I are all going to use packages from Needle in a Haystack. I'm not sure what Jennifer is going to use, but Beth is going to use the combination that sells the least.
I think that's cool. I can't wait to see which one it is.
Yeah. So she's going to do that. And then I'm going to do the Congress cloth, because I just want to do that. But then now you're going to do it from stash. And so I was, when you said that, first was yay, because see, that gives us another different way to go about it. And we're always talking about people using their stash. So here's going to be an example of using stash to do something that a designer has put together. But I think it's instructive to describe how you go about that, because using it from stash is easy to say. But then how do you make that work? So what is your procedure?
So the first thing, obviously, is to pick the watercolors you want to use. And so I love Yellow Fever. It's yellow, lavender, kind of a peachy orange, and a green. But it's kind of a olivey green.
It's called Yellow Fever.
Yellow Fever.
Okay. You know, before you go on, just a side note on the watercolors, that whole Karen Collection stuff. If you want to play with colors and you want to change things up and you're not real experienced or real confident, that's a good place to start, is go to those watercolors or water lilies or whatever, those over-dyed threads that they have, because they have so many varieties, and then that gives you your base. You can work from that and build off of that. And it's just a real easy way to create your own color wheel palette for a project. It's
right. Yeah. You don't have to get your color wheels out or anything like that. Just go find a over-dyed thread that you like. And, you know, you need to know how many threads your project is going to need. A lot of the over-dyed threads are almost monochromatic. You know, they may have two or maybe three shades of the same color.
Mm-hmm.
That would work, but it's going to be a little more difficult. And then, you know, you've got a monochromatic piece, which may be fine. I love monochrome.
Yeah.
I do a fair amount of it. But if you're wanting to bring in some other colors, then you want to look for something that has at least two to three clear colors. And the one that Gay Ann used is, hers had a blue and a lavender and a yellow in it. But then Kathy Ray said that what she has in stock now doesn't have the lavender in it. So that's something to also keep in mind, that watercolors varies from one, I mean, everything varies from one dye light to the next these days. But, you know, so you may find, if you have a shop that has several skeins of a particular watercolor, you might look through all of them and see if one has more colors than another.
Yeah.
One of the colors that I like a lot is Tahiti, and that has purples, oranges, and yellows in it. But some skeins have less purple or less orange or less yellow than other skeins. So, you know, those are things to think about. I'd say you'd want a skein that has at least three different colors in it for most projects.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you pick those primary colors, and then you start looking at threads that are similar in similar colors, but different tones and values. So mm-hmm. you want some light colors and you want some darker colors. So I picked my thread, Yellow Fever. I have some lavender canvas, and I was really sorry to hear Kathy Ray say that one has been discontinued. I immediately ordered a chunk of it from her.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? If somebody has something these days and you think you want it, get it, because you may never see it again. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Right. And I've used that canvas, that color, quite a bit for different things. So, but I already had a piece, so perfect. So then I just went through all of my threads and started pulling stuff out that, you know, was in those color families to see what I had that would work. And I didn't pay a lot of attention to Gann's threads at that point. All I was looking at, I mean, what, you know, Pepper Pot or whatever. All I was looking at was color. What falls in those color families. And so then I had a big pile of threads, four big piles of threads on top of my canvas.
Okay, so let's just kind of back up on that a little bit. So we take the Yellow Fever, and it has three colors in there that you like. And so then you go through and you find colors that either match or are close to, or might be a little lighter, a little darker than those three colors. And you just basically just gather those together.
Yeah.
You're not doing anything else. You don't care what type of thread it is. It, none of that matters. It's just, what colors can I gather together that will work with this Yellow Fever?
Right. Now, one of the things that I've discovered over many years of working with over-dyed threads, because if I can fit an over-dyed thread into something, I will do that. And if I can put more than one in, I'll probably do that too. So what I've discovered is that, and Gayan says this in her instructions, very early on, she says to stitch a little bit with your over-dyed, with your threads, to make sure they're going to all go together. You can't do that if you're in the store picking right. your threads up. So what I do is I will... And obviously this is with a skein of thread that you already own or that you're going to buy in the store. I take it apart and I'll wrap it around a pencil or a pen or my finger if I can't find anything else, to kind of see what the colors look like and how much there is of the different colors.
Mm-hmm.
Because that will help you decide what you're going to emphasize for your thread colors. You know, which color is going to be the, what does she call it? The highlight color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and is that, do you want to use a color that there's a lot of, and just use that as a highlight color and not for your main threads? Or do you want to pick out the color that there isn't very much of, like Gayanne did? I think she used the yellow as her highlight color. So it, just looking at it in the skein, you can't really tell that. Really tell how much there is of any particular color. And I've done a fair amount of that. And then when I started stitching with it, I thought, oh, well, you know, I kind of wish I'd stitched with it before, because I would have chosen, I might have chosen different colors to go with it.
Right.
I'm not unhappy with anything that I did in the past that I did that with, but I might have made different decisions.
Right.
If I'd taken the time to stitch a little bit or to just, and I don't know, I just came up with the pencil idea a couple of years ago. It works.
Yeah. But that's really key, is to stitch for a lot of reasons, because it's really hard to know, hard to visualize unless you're very experienced, how colors are going to go next to each other, mm-hmm. just by laying skeins next to each other. Cause that doesn't always do it. But when you actually stitch some things, you start to see how they're going to interact and how the light's going to come off of them. And right. It really is, you know, we talk about the doodle cloth and people go, oh, geez, spare me the doodle cloth. But yeah. It really is kind of an important part of this process in just giving you a place to test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, Gayanne has given, that's one of the reasons I think that she included the ornaments in there. And yeah. I think that's how she used the ornaments as her test, her doodle cloth. So I will do that. I don't have a little piece of lavender canvas, but I've got white. It'll work on white.
Yeah.
And so I will stitch an ornament or two with the colors that I wound up picking. I didn't put anything away. I just put them all in bags according to color and put them in a box. So what I've chosen, if I don't like it when I stitch with it, then I can go back to my bags of other threads and pull something else out.
Oh, so that saves you time. You know, all right, all the ones that were in play are all right here. I can just go back and I don't have to go back to the main stash. Yeah.
And I might stitch some more ornaments using those other colors.
Mm-hmm.
To just do some other, make some quick ornaments.
Right. Right. And so another thing you mentioned about white canvas. If you're going to do needlepoint counted canvas work, or really needlepoint in general, I mean, I'm a firm believer it pays to go to a store and buy a piece of white and a piece of ecru or off-white needlepoint canvas. Just buy a half yard or whatever. I don't know. To have around, because it's just so handy for these kinds of things to just cut off a square and use it. And you think you have an idea and you want to try it, if you can just go grab a piece. I like to keep a small roll of each, and I have some Congress cloth too for the same reason.
So I buy 8 inches all the way across.
Okay.
So then I can cut it into 8x8, and I think it comes out just a little bit longer than, I mean, like half an inch longer than even. I can't mm-hmm. remember how many I get out of, because I don't remember how wide the canvas is. It might be 48-ish or 42-ish, something like that.
Got me.
You know, yeah. So 8x8 is a good size for ornaments or for doodle cloth or, you know, whatever. I've been using it for the Bargello hearts I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I do. I keep white. I keep ecru. I keep gray. I've got sage. Those are all kind of neutral colors.
Yeah.
And yeah, then I can just cut off a chunk and go.
Yep. It's just, yeah, it's just so handy. Keep it rolled up. Don't let it get creased. Keep it covered up. And yeah, then you always know that if you, you know, I just want to play. You know, somebody showed a little design and I'd like to see what that looks like with this color. Yep. It's, you don't have to go to the store. You don't have to order. You don't have to do anything. You just go grab it out of your room, wherever you have it stored, cut it and go. Yeah.
Right. Right. Absolutely. I agree 100%. So I have two other tips about working with over dyes. And one is that, and I've taken some classes with teachers who really work a lot with over dyes and have given some good tips about how to do color matching. So they, when they dye these threads, they just loop the threads, you know, and I don't know how many yards. But long, long runs, and they the color in varying positions, and then put it in skeins. And if you just open up, take off the tag, and open up the loop, the colors are never going to match because they dye it in much longer stretches. If you want color matching, which you really need to do on something that you have to use it four times because there's only three strands in watercolors, what you do is you unravel it and you lay it out on a big table and you move, lay out one stretch and then pull it and, I don't know how to describe this very well without showing it. Move it around until you get a matching color range and then just keep doing that. You might have a yard and a half in to get it to match. And then you can cut it if you want so that you've got these long strands that are matching, or you can just, you know, kind of tie it together and keep those matched strands. The other thing that some other teacher suggested is to cut in the middle of a color that has a fairly long run. And, you know, some designers, some thread dyers do really short runs. Some of them have much longer runs. It doesn't work as well with dyers that use short runs. What you want is you want to cut in the middle, and then when you start your next thread, you're going to pick up that end that you cut and you're going to thread the other end in the needle. So you're starting with the same color that you ended with. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So then you don't have this, like, you're not going from, you know, orange to green.
Right.
Without a graduation there.
Right. So if you go right in the middle of that color, then you're going to get the densest version of that color.
Right.
And so that's much easier to match than somewhere along the gradation as it's going to a different color.
Right. If you clip it right between the colors, then it's not going to look like it's a continuous.
Right.
Because you have your tail. And that's why if you cut in a short run, it doesn't work as well because you're always going to have a little bit of a tail. And if it's very short, you're going to lose it completely.
Yeah.
On either end.
Yeah.
You know, where you're ending or where you're beginning.
Right.
So look for a longer stretch of the color and make your cuts there.
Yeah. Yeah. I had not thought of that. That's good. I probably did it intuitively, you know, just because it was easier to match, but to consciously know to cut there. That's a good tip. But yeah, that's the advantage of over dyes is the ability to manipulate the colors to get the look you want. But then the disadvantage is, you got to monkey around a little bit, and you'll, that's the other thing. If I'm using over dyed thread in a project, I always get at least one more skein than I need, so that if I have to waste some thread to get the color arrangement I want, then I'm not scrambling for thread. Because sometimes you'll have pieces that just don't fit anywhere, and you just shove them aside. And,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, or there's a color in there. You just sometimes the transition isn't very pretty.
Right.
The colors are muddy. And so you just don't want that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that, so you cut that out, and you'll waste some thread, but you'll still get the look you want. Yeah. It's worth it. Yeah. But have plenty of thread on hand. Don't scrimp, because you'll get frustrated.
Right. Well, and that's where, you want to, again, think about your dye lots and try to get dye lots that are the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's not so critical with something like a watercolors where you're not doing a big field in the same color, where you're just doing rows, like in Gans, there's just different areas, and you might not notice a color, the dye lot change so much, unless your dye lot doesn't have a color that was in your original one.
Yeah.
Which could cause you a problem.
Right.
But, so that's what I look for. If I'm buying more than one skein, I'd want dye lots that were similar, that had similar amounts of the colors.
Yeah.
As much as you can.
Okay. So we have the colors fairly well sorted. At least you're down to, I know what colors I plan to use. And then I have a box over here of others that were at one time an option and maybe again. But now, how do you deal with the different types of threads and the textures? Do you worry about that? So like if Gayan uses a Krynek and a number 5 Pearl, do you try to match that kind of that texture, or do you just go off on your own?
Maybe.
Okay. No, that's fair enough.
So I'm going to use a silk lame braid instead of a Krynek braid. It's still sparkly, and it's about the same weight. I've got the pearl cotton. So I don't have any pepper pot silk. I'm going to use a planet earth silk that I think is at the same weight as pepper pot. And I've got splendor instead of soie d'Alger. So that's a stranded silk.
Yeah.
Could use a stranded cotton. It doesn't have to be a silk. So yeah, I'm fine with changing threads for what's called for. If I don't have what's called for, but I've got something else that is a similar weight, maybe composition, I don't always care about that, but, and so that's part of the test, does it give you the look that you want? Does your substitution give you the look that you want?
Yeah. There's a key thing here. The look that you want, not necessarily the look that Gayan put down on paper.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because like she said, she doesn't want us to do what she did.
Right.
She wants us to
That's
experiment.
The point of this thing. That's the whole point. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Do your thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we don't have a shop near us, so I can't go and look and find a pepper pot. And I guess I could call up Kathy and say, okay, I need a pepper pot in a color that goes with yellow fever. But her dye lot may be different than mine.
Yeah.
Will be, certainly, because mine's probably pretty old.
Right.
So, you know, that gets really hard when you don't have a shop nearby to go and or the shop that is closest to us, I don't think carries Pepper Pot. You know, so I'd still be looking for something to substitute.
Yeah. But now, all right, so that raises the question then, or not raises the question, but anyway, I think underscores how valuable owning the DMC thread, color chart that has actual threads.
Yes.
Because if you have that and you lay your over dye on there, you can find and call up Kathy and say, look, I'm trying to match this over dye, and it looks like it's this DMC color.
Right.
At least she can get in the ball game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're right. And I do use my color card that way.
Yeah. I think when you come to color cards or tools for color, if you own nothing else, to have the DMC color card that has the actual threads on it, not the one that's printed, I think is worth the investment, because it's not going to get old, and there's so many ways that you'll find to use it.
Right. The other one that I use constantly is my Krynek color card, and it is the real Krynek threads.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's I can pull that out and put that against my over-dyed to pick out Krynek threads.
Yeah. And that's valuable because those colors don't always just scream at you. It doesn't always scream red or blue or whatever because of all the sparkles and everything else. So
right.
Some value there. Yeah. I don't own one of those. I should probably get one.
Yeah. They aren't horribly expensive. Mine's pretty old. I've had it for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if I got it from Krynek or from someplace else. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's you know, you can get color cards for the Rainbow Gallery threads, or at least you used to be able in the past, but they're pretty expensive, especially if you're talking like the silks, because the silks are expensive and there's a boatload of them. So they're good, but they're expensive.
Not as universally useful as the DMC.
Unless you're stitching a lot, you know, unless you're doing a lot of stuff in silk.
Yeah.
But, you know, those color cards, we might be talking $100.
Yeah.
For like a Silk Lame color card or the Splendor color card.
Yeah, you gotta want to have one of those. You gotta have a real ongoing need to put that kind of money in it. Yeah,
right.
Because what the DMC, I think the last one I bought was $35, something like that.
Yeah. And you know, with DMC, you can say, okay, I need a 554, which is a purple, mm-hmm. and call up your needlework store and say, find a Silk Lame that is close to 55 DMC 554.
Yeah.
Or a Pepper Pot or a, you know, whatever.
Yeah. That at least gives them a starting spot. Yep.
Yeah.
And
they might not get it exact, because you're never going to get an exact match.
No.
But you don't want it to be exact necessarily. You might want it to be a little lighter or a little darker.
Yeah.
So you need to be sure that, you know, you tell them the story that it's okay if they're, you know, up or down a shade. And I don't know that I've done this with Kathy, but I have done it with Stitchville in Minnetonka, Minnesota. They'll take a photograph and send it to me, you know, the options that they have. And then I can talk with them and pick out the one that I want.
Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah, I'm sure Kathy would do that too.
Yeah. As stores get more used to and do more online stuff, those kinds of options become available as ways to communicate without having to go to the actual store.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that, all right, that allows us. Now, one of the terms that people throw around is this term floss toss. You know, I did a floss toss, or here's my floss toss. Mm-hmm. For people who don't know, when you do that, what are we doing here?
Well, that's when I went through all my threads and picked out the colors that I thought would go.
Yeah.
And piled them up on the canvas. Well, I laid them out. They're not really piled up. I sent you a picture.
Yeah.
So you can put that with, so you can see that. I didn't pile them up for the picture. They were kind of piled up until I took the picture, but I wanted them kind of laid out individually so the picture would make some sense.
Right. Yeah.
So it's just finding all the colors. You know, if it's a pattern that has the, let's say, a cross stitch pattern, then for that, the floss toss is just laying all the threads that are called for in the pattern on top of the fabric.
And that's key too, on top of the fabric, not on white, not on a wood tabletop,
right,
not on black, but on the ground cloth that you're going to use, because that will influence how it appears.
Yeah, especially if you're changing the color of your ground cloth.
Yeah.
For a cross stitch project.
Yep.
That, you know, there might be a color that you just go, ew.
Yep.
That one's not going to work.
Yep. Well, and that's the, you know, that, and then a color that won't show up, that'll blend right in.
Right.
Sometimes you know, the prescribed colors don't always work. And this has happened to me on reproduction samplers where I want to use this linen. And all right, here's all the colors that were prescribed. Well, this one just blends right in and goes away. Well, now you got to find another color that'll at least have some contrast, so that what's stitched there will actually look like something. And you know, that's where that also pays off. Oh, this one just disappears. Right. I better find something else. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can't tell until you actually stitch with it, though.
Yep. I had that. On Hannah Longstreth, I thought, oh, this one's not going to work. And then I stitched with it. Yeah, it's sufficient. You know, it was sufficient, so I left it. But, yeah, initially I thought, oh, I got to find another one. But then, yeah, it showed up enough. It worked, yeah.
Well, you get the texture with the cross stitch, and so you get a little bit of shadow, and that helps it with the color that's close to your ground cloth.
Yeah.
But if yeah, you're doing that's a running stitch or something like that, that might be a different story.
Yeah, just disappears. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to watch for that stuff. But to somebody listening to all this going, oh, geez, I got a headache already. This is way too much work. But to me, that kind of stuff is fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fun just doing that, laying them all out on a table and shoving them around and switching them out. And all right, this group here seems to work. I think I'll do a little stitching with this and see how it works. That's fun. You know, just take an afternoon. I did that. That was a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I literally spent a whole afternoon. I was working on, I wanted to change colors on a project and monkeyed around the whole afternoon. The whole thing just didn't work. What I wanted to do didn't work. But I had a lot of fun just shoving threads around and digging out other threads, and it's all right, whatever.
Yeah, and you think, oh, I forgot I had that thread.
Yeah.
you're digging your threads out and looking to see what you had and finding out that, oh, dang, I just bought a skein of that. I forgot I had it.
Oops. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was another thing. I do this. Do you, if you're in a store, will you just pick up skeins of thread because they look nice and you have absolutely no need for them at the moment? But,
oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay. I feel somewhat normal then.
Yeah. But, you know, and a lot of them are overdyes. I have a whole lot of thread gatherer, silken colors.
Mm-hmm.
I love their threads. I have a fair amount of water lilies. I have a lot of Gloriana. And when I start a project, I'll pull those out and decide which one I want to use and then go find the colors that go with it.
Yeah.
I very, very rarely do the colors that the designer uses.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's a kit. You know, if it's a kit, I'm doing Fantasia, Debbie Rowley's Fantasia right now. That was a kit.
Yeah.
She didn't offer any other colorways. It's what it is. But I really like it, so that's okay. but, you know, most everything else, I change the colors all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not on cross-stitch. I don't do that on cross-stitch. I usually, for cross-stitch, I'll usually do what's on the pattern.
Okay.
Without changing it. And that's largely because I like more complicated cross-stitch. And trying to change all those colors just gives me a headache.
Yeah, if there's a bunch of them, you can get yourself wrapped around around. Yeah, it really gets confusing, and you just go, never mind.
So there's a whole group of people who do color conversions of Mirabilia charts.
Oh, really?
You know, Nora Corbett charts. I found this on Facebook.
Wow.
And so they'll totally change the colors of the dress or the mermaid's tail, you know, whatever it is. They don't look, they're stunning. I wouldn't even, that never would have even occurred to me to do.
Wow. And those are complex designs. Oh, man.
And a lot of them have beads on them, you know, so you have to change the color of the beads too. And yeah.
Wow. So then they'll post the here's the new colorway for this.
Uh-huh.
Holy smokes!
Yeah, it's amazing.
Now there, I'd like to sit in a room and watch that happen.
Uh-huh.
I bet you would learn a lot. Wow. Because I mean, those things just to stitch them straight up is a project and a half.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow. Every time you think you've seen and heard everything in needlework, you haven't. There's always something.
I know. It's just amazing.
Yep.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah.
That's what keeps us entertained.
Yep.
And continuing to do this kind of thing. Because there's always something new coming out.
Yep. That's real talent to do that, to tackle something that complex. Because, yeah, you're right, with all the beads and sparkles and, mm-hmm. Oh, man, wow. Bravo.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to do it, but I have mad respect for the people that do. I mean, like I say, they're gorgeous. They're really awesome.
I got to look this up now.
I think it's called Mirabilia conversions or something like that.
Oh, that's creative. Yeah. I'll look that up. Mirabilia conversions. Okay. What fun.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I'd never stitch one of those. They're just not my cup of tea by any means, but I just admire and am in awe of those designs because there's just so much to them. And she's so good at line and shape and visual direction, all those things that
it's just amazing that you can do that with X's.
I know. Yes, exactly.
or Gayanne's faces. You know, I have Gayanne does the most incredible faces.
Best in the business.
A really tiny face or a much larger one. And so, you know, she's talked about that a little bit on her blog, on her website, and when you talked to her a couple weeks ago. And so that, you know, that I've been paying a little more attention recently to the faces on, well, it's mostly cross stitch because there's not that many designers that are doing faces in canvas.
Right.
I guess you see some on painted canvases, but
yeah.
I mean, you just can't, it's some of the expressions are so bad.
Yep. Yep.
Or there's just, it's incredibly hard.
Yeah.
North Orbit is great at it. GAN is fantastic.
Yeah. Now, see, I find Nora Corbett's to be, her faces, they work, but I find them to be rather formulaic.
Yes. In that,
you know, they're all variations on the same theme, mm-hmm. but they don't have to be really fantastic because there's so much else going on that your eye really doesn't much care as long as there's a face there. But then when it comes to Gayanne's, where a lot of times the face is the focal point or just about every time, the way she pulls that off, it just continues to amaze me. And a lot of times in just a very few stitches, and she manages to make that look like a real face, not some pixelated facsimile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mind-boggling.
It is. It really is. Yeah. You talk about, you know, control of the canvas and thread tension, and, yep, she knows how to get it done. It's amazing. Yeah. Well, she is in just in general, but, yep. So you, I wanted, oh, geez, we're running out of time. I wanted to ask you, you have a stitch group that you do, you and your mother, and I don't know what else goes on there. You know, for people, you know, to set something up like that, what, is this just something where you just, it's just evolved, or, you know, do you guys schedule it? Is it somebody's house all the time? How does that work? If, you know, like say, you know, a bunch of young women want to get together in an afternoon and you know, just get away from the kids for a minute. How do you go about that? Or maybe it's, there's nothing to it.
I mean, there's just a small group of us. It's, and we'll do it at mom's house because she needs her light and, you know, she can't stitch away from her house.
Okay.
At this point. So we just go to her house and there'll be, two others besides mom and me, today. You know, I just shot an email out and said, hey, you want to get together and stitch on the 4th? And, four people is about a good group for her living room.
Mm-hmm.
But she lived in Denver for many, many years, and she was a member of a couple of EGA chapters there. And she had a subset, a group of women that she was really good friends with. And they did Saturday stitch-ins, I don't know, a couple of times a month, I think. Mm. And they'd just, you know, go to somebody's house and they might bring, I don't know, stuff for taco salads, you know, and the hostess would do the meat and then everybody else would bring the other stuff that went in it, or they'd bring desserts or whatever. We're not doing anything like that. We're just getting together to stitch for the afternoon. And it's really kind of just a on the spur of the moment kind of thing for us usually these days.
Yeah.
I do get together with another small group of people at a coffee shop. Once a week, and we just go and sit and stitch for you know, a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Until we have to leave, you know, for whatever. Just really informal kinds of things that, you know, so that would be for the people that want to get away from the house, you know, just go find a coffee shop or library or, coffee shops are good because they have pretty broad hours usually. Barnes & Noble, sitting there, coffee shop. And knitters do this a lot. You know, just find a place to sit and knit in public.
Hmm.
So.
Now, like, do you try to do it in off hours so that you're not taking up tables that, like, at the lunch hour?
Yeah, usually we're... usually we're in there around 9 o'clock maybe, or 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And of course we always get something to eat or drink, you know? So, we do try to, we're not there during the rush hours usually.
Yeah. 'Cause that always bugs me. If you go into say a Panera or any of those places at lunch and someone is camped out, taking up a full table, have obviously been there and obviously aren't going away. And right. then people are milling around looking for a place to sit down to have lunch because they got to get back to work. It's like, don't do that. You know, find a time when the place is empty. Yeah.
That's rude.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And coffee shops are particularly bad about that because they all have Wi-Fi and people bring their computers and park themselves.
Right.
And sit there for hours.
I know. Yeah. I think that's, you know, one cup of coffee doesn't justify sucking up a table for 4 hours. That's not going to get
no,
it done.
No, it doesn't.
No. So do these things, and I'm asking because, you know, not something I do or have done, do these things become more of a social thing, or is actual stitching getting done, or is it a good mix?
I'd say it's a good mix. You know, maybe the first little bit is social, you know, because we haven't seen each other for, you know, a few days or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but once you get caught up with all the chit chat, you know, then we sit and stitch. We don't have the TV on or the, you know, might turn some music on, but we're stitching.
Okay. So the, you know, the conversation kind of drops off then, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For the little group of us that get together at the coffee shop, you know, we might talk about, you know, how we're going to do a certain project if we're all working on the same thing and we're all doing different colors, you know, or
right.
whatever.
Right.
Or there's a stitch that we might be having a little trouble with, you know, we can, you know, we chat about stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a good mix, I'd say.
Yeah. Okay. I'm probably asking questions that for women is just a normal thing, but you know, get together and like you said, I'll do the meat, you bring all the fixings, and yeah, not doesn't fit in my mindset. So yeah, okay.
Well, and you know that would be a group of really good friends that, you know, and I'm sure that there was a lot of chit chat going on when they were doing those, but they stitch too. I never actually got to go to one because I was in Iowa.
Yeah.
And she was in Denver. So
kind of a problem there. Yeah.
Yeah. And for a while, we used to do like one Saturday a month on a regular basis. We kind of got out of that habit, after a while, but, and used to do some kind of food, but
yeah.
I don't really cook much. Mom doesn't cook at all. So, you know, it's just a lot of hassle to.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if we want something to eat, we might go out or we might just order a pizza.
Yeah. Okay. I was just curious when you said you were doing that, just how that all came together. Yep. I'll just stay here by myself, but you know. It's what works for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the way we all stitch most of the time.
Yeah.
By ourselves. You know, it's always more difficult when you're stitching away from your nest.
Yes.
If you don't have, you know, all of your tools right to hand. You know, I do have a little to go bag.
Okay.
That has a little pencil holder thing in it that I have needles, the whole, you know, gamut of needles in there. I've got scissors. I've got laying tools. I've got tweezers, pencils, pens, you know, anything that I might need while I'm out stitching.
So you don't have to gather all that before you go. It's just grab your bag and go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because invariably you forget something.
Every time.
Mm-hmm.
Every time. Yeah. How many people have posted that they went on a trip and forgot needles? It's just. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So the tools, I don't worry about. I have gone places and forgot to put my thread in the bag.
Oops. Yeah.
So it's always a good idea to have a couple of projects in your bag.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you don't have what you need for one, you can switch to the other one.
Right. Yeah. I did that when I was traveling. I have a bag still have it. That when I was traveling regularly, same kind of thing. I didn't even think. You just grab that bag, throw it in the suitcase, and it's done.
Yep.
Yeah. All extra tools in there, everything. It's just done. And because you invariably forget something. Like one time I got everything and I forgot the instructions. Like, you've got to be kidding me. You know, and it was an over one multiple color change cross stitch piece. So you couldn't just fake it, you know.
Not winging it on that one.
Nope. Yeah. So okay, well, just wondered how you women folk do all that, basically. So seems doable, but I'll just stay here. Yeah. Plus Tour de France time now. Yeah, that's a good 3+ hour of you just need it on in the background and stitch. Yeah, I'm good. Mm-hmm.
What are you working on?
Well, actually, I'm starting. I started on the Gay Ann Rogers Lady Mary from the Downton Abbey series, a geometric.
Yep.
So I'm working on that until I get my threads for Saint-Tropez, and then I'm switching over. Yeah. That's. Yep, doing that. Watch the Tour de France. Cold beverage, good to go. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Sounds like a plan.
I like it. All right, that's going to be it for this week. Join us tonight for more of this kind of stuff. And Sunday, Ada Hayden, Eye Candy Needle Art, will be our guest. Thanks for listening.
Bye.